Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader with Chris Raposo. Today my guest is Kevin Renton and he is the principal at Electric Kite and publisher at Vault Magazine. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Great to finally be able to get an episode done. Yes, you've done more than 100. I can't believe it's like you've done 100 and this is my first. But I'm glad to be here.
It is your first, but it's going to be a great one because you're great people. I've talked to you a while back. Yeah. We met at AMA in Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago, and we saw each other again in Chicago. Yeah. And we just kept connected and stayed connected, and we've collaborated with the Vault Magazine and Hand in Hand along the way. So Kevin's great people, good insights, and I'm really excited to share the episode that we have today, which is navigating the higher ed marketing vendor maze. Kevin, from your perspective Vault Magazine, how has the higher ed marketing vendor landscape transformed in the past 5 years? There's more people coming in, more companies VC backed. Tell me about that.
It's funny, I've been in agency world in the US for close to 10 or 11 years now. I guess it's into two buckets. You've got the MarTech stack, and then you've got the agency world as well. I don't know if you can remember the MarTech graph in like 2011. I think it had 150 different tools and things on it. And by 2017, there was over 5,000. And I think that's the same in higher ed as well. There were so many tools. But actually, when you dig into that, into the tools in the MarTech, there's been consolidation. 60% of those tools have either been merged, bought, gone. And it's happened in our space as well. Whether that's, Salesforce buying up people, HubSpot buying people, all the different tools are actually consolidating into, to larger platforms. So that's one thing that I think us within the higher ed space has given these tools more functionality. And they've been able to, the products, I think, have been able to keep up to pace or move faster. The agency world has kind of happened a bit later. I mean, I think when we were at AMA in Washington, I want to say there was like, 70% of the vendors at that AMA were agencies. But over the last 3 years, that consolidation's really happened in our market. And you mentioned it in the question that, there's a lot of VC money coming to the agency, and agencies like Carnegie, they obviously bought M. Stoner back in the day with Michael Stoner. Voltaire, I think, was on your show, done an episode. I think Carnegie recently bought somebody new recently, I think Sexton Marketing, maybe based in Florida. So they've become a big agency as well. Education Dynamics, I think they've had something like $110 million over 10 years. And they, of course, recently purchased R.W. Jones. 160 over 90, I think, was the first Endeavor bought them. But kept the 160 name. So there's definitely been that consolidation in the agency side. And I guess for us as well, I think everybody was kind of excited when the announcement of Element 451 with their $170 million plus whatever investment they've got. But it ripples through the market. It does actually, it changes the engagement that agencies have, and still the independent agencies, it impacts them well. Like, how do they compete and how do they fit in? And I also think in the agency side, I think the universities probably haven't got up to speed yet about what it means about their partner agency. I think the question's going to come up more and more. Hey, if you're, if I'm a liberal arts school in Pennsylvania, and you're working with the three other liberal arts schools around me in Pennsylvania, how do we compete, or how do we, are we sharing information, or how are we putting our best foot forward? And having worked in a similar sort of market when I was back in London, you know, the sort of answer is usually going to be, oh, we separate the teams and there's not sharing of information. And but at the end of the day, schools are going to have to start looking at that and making the decision of, hey, do I go best in class, or do I go big agency with umbrella services? What's going to be the most effective for me? So there's definitely change of foot, and I think it'll be driven by what the schools and universities actually want and need, and whether they get the results that they actually need.
You reminded me of something there when you talked about the agencies in Philadelphia, for example, smaller agencies, if they represent two schools that target the same market, how are they going to differentiate themselves and who's going to come out on top? Reminded me of a 30 for 30 episode I watched recently about John Elway and Dan Marino when they were in the draft back in the 80s, and they had the same agent representing both of them, and both were up for first pick, right? And it was like, yeah, hey, you know, where's the conflict there, and who's gonna who you're going to you know, put on top of the food pile? So it's something to definitely keep in mind. Now let me tell you, ask you about this. What if there's an NDA enclosed, right, a non-disclosure agreement? You know, how do you know that somebody else is representing a particular school that's competing for students with you?
I think it would be simple. You know, in your RFP, you would have to just be like, do you have any NDAs that you can't disclose if you're working with competitors? And if they come back and say yes, I think you take the NDA as the, you know, as the sort of decision of okay, then what do we do here? But it's interesting, even, you know, with the products, with the individual, you know, there's still a lot of independent agencies, whether it's like, you know, Truth and Consequences is a new branding agency in Philly that's done really, really well. Ology, one of the OGs, is kind of like, has gone employee owned. We're still independent. I think Simpson Scarborough is still independent. I'd have to ask Jason. But, you know, for the agencies that are still independent, it's positioning themselves, you know, in that best in class kind of sort of framework to actually try and win out, because we are coming up against massive agencies. But I guess, Chris, you'll find it with Hand in Hill and with Cascades. Like, there are some big products out there, whether it's Psycho or Adobe Experience Manager, you know, some DXPs or some new entrants into the market, or competing with WordPress and you know, Drupal and Acquia. The competition never stops.
Yeah, it never stops. And the main differentiator is the personalization part, right? To have a personal connection with your clients and maintaining that, instead of just them being a number on a spreadsheet. Yeah. I think it's very important. And just have that concierge service that people want. And if they go with the smaller company, they probably get more than they would go with a broader one that, you know, has one account executive or one account person or case manager for 16 different portfolios. So that's something to keep in mind there as well. If you go smaller, you're probably going to get the more hands-on experience with your vendor.
It's true. We, you know, we kind of laugh when we go up against the big agencies. They have the pitch team, which is usually some of the most senior people in the agency. Mm-hmm. And of course, you win the work, and then the pitch team disappears.
Yes,
and you get the more, you know, the junior staff did the production, but
and then you're locked in, you know, so you have to remember that and realize that. But you know, you live and learn, and you can only pull that off so many times with the big agencies. But because word travels fast in the industry, so if there is a bad, you know, reputation brewing, folks will talk about it and will make the proper adjustments and warn their peers about certain agencies or vendors out there. So that's also something to keep in mind, because higher ed is, even though it's big, it's small, because everybody knows everybody on the conference circuit. You know, you can see that when you meet someone, and for sure, definitely gotta keep that engagement high. You mentioned that back in a couple of years ago, 70% were agencies, and now that's higher. And I noticed that a couple of people that are, you know, thought leaders, well respected in-house marketers went out on their own to start their own consultancies, right? So you can just see that more and more, and they're using the guerrilla marketing sort of. They don't have a booth at the particular event, but they still go there and speak and get their name out there, and they have that trust because they are the peer that actually walk the walk and spin in the trenches with them. So it's a good differentiator there as well.
I think the solopreneur model is going to get more popular and more prevalent in the market. I also think as AI comes in and impacts the tools and makes you more productive, it will only lend to that solopreneur being more effective. So you see, you know, Jamie Hunt is obviously the one in the higher ed space that most people know, but we work with like Amadina Mann. She used to be the CMO for Uber, and she's working on a project with us, but she's a solopreneur. I think Kevin Tyler's maybe going to go out and be a solopreneur. So there's a couple of people that are high profile that you're starting to see that. And I think it'll happen more and more.
Yeah. And then you have those outliers that have been on the agency side for many years, like Jennifer Lunkard, the one you introduced me to. Yep. She worked for Carnegie for 12 and a half, almost 13 years. And now she has co-founded Ambio EDU, which is, they put TV ads in front of through streaming services, right? It's one of those things I've never heard of, and I talked to her earlier today. Tell me about her a little bit.
Yeah, I think that the market, once you like working in higher ed and it's a really tight community, and you mentioned it, once you start knowing the people and knowing the influencers, and certainly once you get your understanding on how the business development process works in RFPs. It means that you can jump from different products and you can see opportunities. And Jen, you know, she started this new product, which really actually, I like the product, or the actual, because what it's doing is it's bringing you the technical marketing platform that you'd have for digital marketing, but for TV. And I think in any tool that allows you to actually pinpoint your audience and meet your audience where they actually are, I think that tool's always impactful, and being able to get a TV branded spot that really elevates your message and your brand as an institution. If you actually know that, yes, this family is going to be watching this and they go to a high school that's a target for us, then I think it's a great thing. So it'll be interesting to see how the journey works with Jen.
Especially the streaming apps, because they can't be skipped. It's unlike the YouTube ads, you know?
So we ran a campaign with them for, I think it was the Mount St. Mary, and they had like a 96% completion rate.
Yeah.
So they watched you can. And that's the other thing I think with these, you kind of look at your own behavior. You know, we're all on Hulu or Amazon and the Netflix and the ad comes on. You're like, all right, I'll watch the ad for 30 seconds.
Exactly. Or you walk away to the kitchen, but you still hear it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I usually do. But, yeah. Yet it builds that familiarity and trust. And if you show up, there's a different hierarchy right there when you're on TV compared to YouTube. It makes you a little bit famous, right? You're up there with the big players. Your commercial may follow a Dove or an Adidas commercial, right? All of a sudden you're on the same level psychologically. You're like, oh, they just follow them, and they must be as important as those big players that I've seen all my life. She told me about some of the campaigns that she ran during the summer, during yield season and during melt season, and they said the yield was tremendously high, and because of those TV ads, and they could confirm that the marketers in-house, because that was the only change that they made for their marketing efforts, they brought her in and her company. So definitely something I have not heard of. I'll have her on the show in a couple of months, so definitely love to dig into it a little bit deeper. We talked about the vendor categories. Somebody at an institution, maybe they're big, maybe they're small, maybe they have a limited budget. What are the three vendor categories that higher ed marketers absolutely cannot afford to overlook in 2025? I mean, you said there's EdTech, MarTech, and agency. Is there anything else that people should look at?
I think those are your two buckets. And even within the two buckets are agency and your MarTech stack. And within your agency, you've got, okay, your brand, your website, and your student acquisition from the admissions part. And that's where you've got to make that decision. Do you go with one agency or do you go with a best in class? Do you go looking for an agency that just builds websites, yeah, type things? So you've got your agency stack there. Your MarTech stack, I think the main technologies that I think you need to look at and are your big decisions are what are you building your website on? What's your CMS? Within that CMS, and it's, I think it's a it'll become a different thing, is what is your search functionality on your website? I think your search functionality is becoming critical. And then the next one's your CRM. Your marketing automation or your admissions database, like how are you actually going to get those to build? And I think those are the really big decisions that you have to make.
Yeah, especially, when it comes to the CMS, do you want to open source? Do you want to close source? Do you want to cascade CMS closed source? Or do you want to stick with your WordPress that's open source, but then may have hacking going on there because it's more vulnerable than a closed source?
I think the thing with the website, the trend that I think that the bigger schools are already doing this, but I think that multi-site is something that's actually going to become more and more common, even for the smaller schools.
Yeah.
If you look at, they're obviously a big school and they're Princeton, but Princeton currently have like a Drupal multi-site instant. I think it's Jill Maracca that runs it. And they're running something like 1,200 different websites. Mm-hmm. But you go to their internal web team and they just spin up a site for you using their multi-site. But what it does is it allows you to segment for audiences and actually create digital experiences for different audiences. I think you see in a lot of smaller schools, and it's budget driven. You have your main university website and you're trying to get everything on there. Like you're trying to make it admissions focused, but you've also got your alumni and donor, on the same website, where a lot of the bigger schools are going to move that off into individual separate sites. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something in the websites that we'll see in the next sort of 2 to 3 years.
Now, when it comes to search, because you mentioned the search tools are very important too. I know of Search Stack and I know of Cluedo. Those are the two higher education partners.
Yeah.
Anyone else that people should look at besides those two?
I've used Funnelback in the past.
Okay.
Funnelback is now Squiz. And they've turned into like a DXP, which is, more of a digital experience platform. They've brought a CMS in there. But I think the search thing, I think the interesting thing for search is that, the top 10% of your users that come to your website, like 40 to 50% of those users will use your search functionality. So these are the ones that are going to take action, whether they're applying, donating, finding information out. And if you don't have that search experience sorted out, it's going to impact the conversion on your website. And I think AI will also impact that. It's UX, it's Jacob's Law. Users will want to, the search functionality to work with how they're used to it working. And now Google's brought in their AI answers. So if everyone's using Google and putting in searches, or they're using ChatGPT and it gives you the answer.
Right.
Now when you put it on your website and they put the search in, it just gives a normal search response. The user's going to start thinking this looks old and tired.
Yeah, we have our Cascade User Conference coming up in a couple of weeks, and Cluedo is one of the speakers there. They're one of the gold sponsors, and they have been an AI-powered search capability.
Yeah.
And we actually use them on the Hand and Hill page as well, website, Cluedo, so that's really intuitive. But I know I heard of Funnelback and Squiz because I know a lot of people who moved from, was it Squiz to Search Stack, like Jeff Dillon, for example. He was one of them, I think.
Yeah.
He moved over there, so. Yeah, definitely. And then when it comes to CRM, I know Element 451 and what is the other one? Slate? It's pretty big.
Yeah, Slate's, I think, well, Element 451 are the new entrant. But Slate and Salesforce, I think, are, the big players in the market for the CRMs. I think they probably take up between them 65, 70% of the market. Slate was a really interesting journey because You know, obviously a lot of the work that I've done in the past in higher ed has been for the marketing teams, but Slate really came into the market, into the industry with the admissions teams, and it really, it's admissions focus, and the admissions teams love it, but often it doesn't have the functionality that the marketing teams work, so you have to actually navigate that. I love HubSpot, and HubSpot 10 years ago had a higher ed team totally focused on higher ed, trying to break into the market.
Yeah.
And they just got momentum and traction with high growth SaaS companies, that's where all the product development went to. And their higher ed team, you know, sort of backed off. But Jenny Petty at, I think, University of Montana, she's going to implement HubSpot. So hopefully that goes well, and we can see a conference talk at like AMA one year, and we can get HubSpot into higher ed.
Yeah, HubSpot. I looked into HubSpot personally as well. It looks like a great tool. We haven't gone with it, but heard a lot of good things about it. One of my previous guests in the summer that I had, she's out of Alabama from a little community college, and they're using HubSpot as well, and she had great feedback on HubSpot. Now, you know, we mentioned Element 451, 451 earlier. They're really going all in on AI and the CRM space. And, you know, with the acquisition of Enrollify Network, they're really broadening that footprint and that social proof, because they partner with all these amazing higher ed thought leaders, well-respected people, getting them in the corner and getting their name out there. So that's a really smart strategy that I thought when they acquired Enrollify.
Yeah, I think... And we have Vault, and it's one of these things where we came from it from a different direction, in the sense of Vault for us, we actually keep quite separate from Electric Kite in the agency, and we run it as a publication with editorial independence. Whereas, and you know, Aaron, who's my head of content for the agency, he's always arguing about church and state and separating the commerciality of both of them. But Enrollify is really used as the inbound marketing tool for Element 451. So you're right, it's like, it's really connected to the product and really elevates the brand. And it's a great tactic. It goes back to, you know, Red Bull and killing marketing. It's using content to actually, you know, amplify yourself and take that inbound to the next level. But it'll be, the interesting thing with Element 451, it will be interesting to see how they take on Slate and Salesforce. I almost, you know, I've not spoken to Ardis about this or Mally since they've got the investment. But, you know, the level of that investment, it'll be interesting to know if there's a business plan to break out of higher ed. Or are they just going to specifically focus on higher ed?
Let's talk about Vault Magazine a little bit. Because I'm reading it. I know you have... Trusted Voices, right? It's part of Vault.
Yep.
The podcast. Yeah, that's right. So I've been listening to that. I've been spotlighting the Trusted Voices podcast on our 10 must listen to higher ed marketing podcast for the Hen and Hill blog every year. Really good, insightful episodes. But I also know that you used, you had like columns of higher ed marketers, columnists like Jamie Hunt, for example, Dear Jamie, they had a series there. So that was pretty interesting to have her partner with Vault just to get her name associated with you guys and then just build that trust and get some insights and questions answered. I thought it was a really smart move on your part.
Yeah, I think one of the things about publishing Vault is that it really introduces you to the community, and you'll know what it's like working in higher ed. There's a lot of great professionals, a lot of great marketers, and the people that you get to meet and the journey that you get to go on when you publish something, it's been a fun journey, and you get to learn a lot as well. So I think for me, the main plus that's enriched my professional career is actually the people that I've got to meet and the actual conversations that I've got to have, that we've been able to have. I think when we started it as well, you know, the columns, you know, we've gone back, our editorial strategies gone back and forward from opinion pieces that are less higher ed marketing focused to actual tactical awareness and actually quite tactical pieces as well. But Aaron and Nicole do a great job, the editorial. I really just organise the publishing, so I'm involved sometimes with the editorial, but not as much as Aaron and Nicole. And the podcast with Aaron and Teresa with Trusted Voices has been fantastic, but also Kevin Tyler's done great with Higher Voltage. So it's been fun.
So talking about your agency, Electric Kite, it was eCity Interactive in the past.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that and what you offer there.
So it was interesting. When I first joined the agency 9 years ago, we spoke about rebranding the agency then. And part of it was because, you know, we were part of a larger media group. Center City Film and Video is the largest film production company and fairly independent. And we were really the tech production arm. So we were a website production shop. But Lewis and I were like, look, you know, gone are the days where people are just coming and asking for a website. They're actually looking for the final sort of KPI, whether that's a student or a donor or a lead. And we really transformed and became more of a sort of CX customer experience agency or a full stack integrated agency. So we have a strategy team, UX team, design, dev team, content team, all in-house. And we're really sort of focused on taking your digital user through that journey to get to that final point. We still build websites, and oftenly I find that the origin of an agency is what you're probably most strong at. So we're currently building a big couple of websites as well. I know Lewis built a great website for Foresight Tech, which was Devin, who won Marketer of the Year at AME this year. We're still building a lot of websites. But so the Electric Kite rebrand, we knew we were rebranding before we launched Volt. So Electric Kite goes with Volt because it's the electricity connection. So we launched Volt and had Volt for like 3-4 years before the rebrand of the agency happened. But it was interesting to go through a branding project because obviously we do some branding projects for our clients. To actually go through the process yourself and see what it means to you as an organization. It's not just like changing the logo and changing the name. A lot of it's the culture and how you do work and the people that work in the organization. And I think we were Electric Kite for 2 or 3 years before we changed the name. We already felt like a different agency.
And I always thought it was a nod to Ben Franklin with the kite experience.
It is.
It's what I thought.
Okay. So it's a fun Philly connection.
Yeah, I'm glad you confirmed that because I was putting one and two together in my head. I was like, this is probably what this is. Now, talk about a hybrid marketer listening when they're out there looking for agencies, looking for MarTech, EdTech partners. What are some red flags that they should watch out for when vetting potential vendor partnerships?
I think in any sort of B2B partnership or that part of the process, I think a lot of it comes down to case studies and references. You can see the demos and you can see the RFP responses and the pitches, and then right at the end it's going to be, hey, can we see the work that you've done and can we speak to people that you've done the work for? And that's what it usually comes down to at the end. And even when we do, like the agency does 50% higher ed, 50% B2B, and when we're working with our B2B clients and we're talking about content, the most important content is your case study and the case studies there, because that's what the customer's eventually going to look at.
Yeah, social proof is the best proof. That's what we see. Now, let's say you bring somebody in, right? And you have your in-house team and they've been there for a while, but you feel like you need to, certain parts need a bit of upskilling and specialization that your in-house team may lack, and they need to partner with somebody from the outside. How can marketing leaders ensure there's good alignment between their institutional goals and services and the services provided by the external partner to make sure everybody's in sync?
I think a big part is how you onboard your agencies. The first thing is setting up those initial frameworks and goals, and then it's actually how you onboard your actual agencies and clients. But I would almost take a step back to be like, okay, if we're aligning to goals and KPIs, like, are you fully set with what your KPIs are and what your goals are before you try to bring in a partner to actually align with them? So on the admission side, you know, speaking to CMOs or head of admissions, it's a case of like, do you know your cost per acquisition per student? Do you know that your lifetime value of a student? And once you start getting those data points, then you can actually map out your funnel. And if you're then going, hey, we have a weakness here in this part of our funnel, you'll then be able to measure whether that service or partner will actually be able to impact that funnel. And then we have different analytics frameworks that we use. So for websites, we use the HEART framework, which is what Google uses, which is happiness, engagement, adoption, retention, and task success. And for every sort of part of your funnel of different things, you should have different KPIs that are then leading up to what your final goals or institutions are. And then culturally, I think there's things like, you know, this, the whole onboarding process, stakeholder interviews, assumption roundtables. I love doing surveys. I love doing micro surveys on deliverables. So we have a process where when we deliver something, different milestones, you know, it's like the Uber thing. How did you like this? 5 stars, 4 stars, 3 stars. And you're getting immediate feedback that the team actually really likes. Because they're like, oh, that maybe didn't go well. And you actually start seeing parts of your process that you're like, well, maybe this isn't impactful or what the actual client actually wants.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's good. Definite engagement and those deliverables and the stats right in front of you to see what works, you know, because people can talk a lot, but if you have the proof in the pudding and you can see the results,
yeah,
they're from the surveys, you know, there's going to be more buy-in from anybody or everybody, even if they're not directly involved with the process. So I think that's a good way to strategize there.
Attribution has been a challenge in higher ed on the admissions data. Really to get all your CRMs talking to each other in Google Analytics. So if you're running paid campaigns and then, you know, maybe you're using a marketing automation platform to begin with, or then you've got another CRM, you're using Slate at the bottom, like, how are you tying that application actually to actually be like, okay, this came from, here's the attribution, your first touch or last touch or whatever you're looking to actually see what's working in your marketing. There was an interesting product called Acero that I really liked. I think Simpson Scarborough have done a deal with them to be a sole user in the US. But Acero is an interesting piece of tech to actually work on your attribution.
What is it called? Acero?
Acero. A-K-E-R-O.
And where are they based out of?
They're actually Brit. They're UK.
Okay.
The original tech teams in the UK.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into those. Those guys. But Kevin, super insightful episode. Now, if anybody wants to partner with you or learn more about Vault Magazine or Electric Kite, how can they get a hold of you?
I would find me on LinkedIn. I love my LinkedIn. I probably use my LinkedIn messaging now more than my email. In the sense of we use Slack internally, so all our internal comms are on Slack. Our external and client comms are on our email, but I'm probably more responsive on LinkedIn, so find me there.
Very good, very good. I'll be sure to tag you in the show notes as well as Electric Kite. Vault Magazine, I encourage everybody to subscribe to Vault Magazine's podcast and check out their articles and their columnists there. It's really great, insightful content that anybody can use for the betterment of their institution. So Kevin, really appreciate you being part of the show today, my friend.
Thanks, Chris. Good to see you, man.
You too. Take care. Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the show and sticking with me to the end. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Education Marketing Leader and share it with your friends and your network. This episode was brought to you by Scriba Sound Podcast Production. It's one of my ventures. If you ever thought about starting your own podcast, be sure to reach out to me. I would love to help. You follow the show and tune in every other Thursday as I interview higher ed marketing leaders for your benefit. I see you next time. Have a good day, friends. Take care.